So something that's been growing in the world of sports and in all sports is skills coaches and personal trainers. And I know we have some personal trainers who listen to the podcast. And for you, we've got a special guest today, which is NBA shooting coach Dave Love. And over the next 2 weeks, he's going to help us improve as trainers, but also to deepen our connections and relationships with the players that we're working with. And I know a lot of other team coaches are going to find that part of the conversation very helpful. But another part of our discussion that we're really going to focus in on today with Dave Love is addressing a frustration that I know a lot of coaches are experiencing when it comes to these skills coaches and personal trainers. And that is just this disconnect, the disconnect between the trainer and the coach. And at the end of the day, this disconnect, this lack of communication, this frustration with each other, it's not serving the player or the person that we're trying to develop. And we need to be working together. And I think Dave Love is going to offer us some great stuff for coaches of all sports on how to develop player skills, how to develop relationships. But I also think he's got some great advice for trainers and coaches on how to start working together so that we're really serving the needs of every athlete that we have the privilege of working with. Welcome to the Coaching Culture Podcast, brought to you by Thrive on Challenge. I'm JP Nurbin, joined by my friend and co-host Nate Sanderson. Each week, in about 30 minutes, we discuss important principles and strategies of transformational leadership. At Thrive on Challenge, we help coaches to raise the standards and strengthen the relationships in their program because we know this type of culture produces better leaders, better people, and better results. To learn more about how we can help you, go to thriveonchallenge.com, where you can also subscribe to our weekly newsletter and get the coaching notes to every episode of this podcast. So Dave, you've worked for over 18 years as a basketball skills coach. You've worked with NBA players and teams. One player in particular in the NBA, Aaron Gordon, you've helped him improve his free throw percentage by 30% in one season, which is obviously incredible. But you've also worked at the youth level. You don't just work with professional athletes. So you've been kind of all over the world helping players to improve their game. It's probably a unique relationship, a little bit different than that of the traditional coach, like so many of our coaches that listen to this podcast. But I guess I'm really curious, what has been the most fulfilling and satisfying part of being a skills coach over the last 18 to 20 years?
The relationship is probably the most fulfilling part, that the results are wonderful and the results are kind of why we start. But the relationship is the most fulfilling part, where you have to actively search for reasons to care about the person, because ultimately I'm trying to help someone else get better at something, which is so obvious to say. But if you really want to help somebody, you have to care about them. It's hard to help someone that you don't care about at all. And so you start off as strangers. And I actively search for ways to engage on a personal level with them. I don't need to become best friends, but we need to have some sort of personal relationship. And I need to genuinely care about them as a person and want them to be successful. And so things like meeting. The two players that stand out, Elfrid Payton and Bismack Biyombo, both didn't really want me around for the first part of our relationship. And I'm saying that fairly politely. Like, both kind of hated me in the beginning. And now both are probably my closest friends of the players that I work with, like have the best personal relationship with now, just and watching that evolve has been the most fulfilling part about my career over the last 5 years.
When it comes to that resistance to the relationship, you know, the withdrawal, the lack of not wanting to connect with you, I'm sure they're not the only players that you've experienced that with, but let's look at those two men, for instance. What what are some of the initial resistance? Is that, you know, what are some of the reasons behind that resistance that you kind of face when it comes to building that connection?
Two things. Probably the perception of what a shooting coach represents. Like just being told, hey, we want you to work with a shooting coach sort of implies you're not very good at shooting. And so I try and flip that to say, it's not that, it's we can look at it from the perspective that we actually, as a team, as an organization, we see a lot of potential in you and want to help you realize it. So we can easily flip that into a positive thing. And then the second part of the resistance is they get advice at that level from everyone, from the radio guys, from reporters, from fans on the street to fans on social media. Everybody believes they know how to fix a player who's a weaker shooter and is just telling them, you know, just spend 5 minutes on this and I can guarantee you that, like, everybody's trying to help them. And then this old bald guy that doesn't look like much of a player walks in and is just another one of those voices. So I'm going to help you. And they go, yeah, right. And then you have to kind of win over their trust. I mean, they're trusting you with their career, and you can't take that lightly. So put those two things together. And I think that's where most players kind of start from a guarded place, and you have to get over that hurdle.
Well, I love those two examples because I don't think they just apply to high level basketball players. I think they apply to everyone. I think coaches in offering any correction, you know, here you're offering shot correction. We can offer any technical correction, tactical correction, or we can offer some sort of behavioral correction, you know, on something in their program. You know, before we can really offer correction, there has to be a connection. There has to be a relationship there before they'll really listen, right? And I think you touched on that piece, and also especially as players are more and more in the spotlight, more and more people want a relationship or a connection, but for their own selfish reasons, right? To be associated with them, to have their name next to them, to have their photo with them. Everybody wants a piece of them. Everyone wants to be their coach. Everyone wants to be their friend for what they'll get out of it. And I think even you see in high school players, right? They're playing AAU. You've got a million different coaches that are trying to get them on their team. They're trying to, you know, even high schools are recruiting against each other. So there is this resistance that you see and you experience even as a shooting skills coach to the relationship, you know, this lack of trust. So my question is then, as you're facing this type of resistance, how do you start to walk with them in this process to kind of have this mutual trust, mutual respect, and start to build that connection?
The first thing that I try and do is acknowledge what I'm not. I realize I'm asking the players to be vulnerable with me. Like I'm asking them to be vulnerable and potentially look bad in front of a stranger. And so I try and be vulnerable with them early on. And I'll just say to them, like, here's what I do exceptionally well. I do shooting mechanics really, really well, but I don't do these things well. And so I'll flat out say to a player, if I give you advice on this part of your game or this part of your game, ignore me. And I think there's a little bit of a shock factor with that for players where they hear, oh, a coach admitting that he doesn't know everything. I think that can be rare at times. So I think I get their attention with saying, like, hey, I'm great at this and I'm terrible at that. And so you're going to want to ignore me if I talk about that. So that's the first thing I try to do. I try to make sure that I will talk a lot in the first workout because you need to coach and explain and all these different things. So there is a fair amount of conversation, but I do try and shut up as well. And I'm very careful about only saying things that I know are true. They may be my opinion, but I believe strongly enough in them that they're true. And I will really shy away from saying anything that I'm unsure of, because you can lose a player just like that in the first workout, where if you say something and they disagree, if they don't believe what you've said to be true, you've potentially lost them. So the old expression my mentor gave me was, you don't have to say a lot, but when you say something, make sure you're right. And then the last thing that I'll really do is actively search for things that we can engage about on a personal level. Like, and I just have these stupid questions that I start to ask, and they're in a genuine way. But now the more people I've talked to, I've realized like, I'm just genuinely like trying to engage with the person. And so I'll start off with like, just silly things like, what are you watching on Netflix now? What's the song that you're listening to on repeat? Like what kind of music are you into? What kind of music do you like that you're kind of embarrassed to admit about? Like, if I grab your phone and I start going through your music, is Taylor Swift going to be on there? Be honest with me. Like, just these sorts of little conversations. Where are the top five Michael Jackson songs? Everybody seems to be able to pull out a few Michael Jackson songs that they love. So last great movie you watch, are you a reader? What kind of video games do you have? And just searching for something that he and I or she and I can share that forms the basis of our personal relationship that we can have a conversation about. And sometimes it takes a long time. I talked about Alfred Payton, and it was a year and a half before we discovered we were both watching House of Cards. And all of a sudden, that was 90% of our conversation was, what episode are you on? And that was the turning point in our relationship. When he went from, I don't trust this guy, I've kind of got my eye on him, watching me work with other players, to, I'll give him a shot, to, this is now my guy. And I honestly think it was House of Cards that was the tipping point. So how silly is that? But it doesn't matter how silly it is, it worked.
I don't know if our listeners know this, but if you've probably checked Nate's iPhone or phone, that you'll see that Taylor Swift is in fact his favorite artist. So
I have some Taylor Swift on my phone, and I'm going to blame it on the fact that I have a 13, soon to be 14 year old and an 11 year old daughter. And so it's not really for me. It's for them.
No, I think what you're talking about there is so awesome, because I think the two big things I'm taking away are, the first is about you being vulnerable, just, hey, I'm not an expert in every area, I think that's just really, really powerful. And I think it starts to open that door to that relationship. But, in just the questions, you said silly questions, but that's kind of like the vulnerability dance, right? You're kind of taking little steps with them on, hey, what do you watch? And then what's something you might be embarrassed about that you listen to, or something like that music wise. So you're just, it's not really asking some deep, dark secret, but it's right. It's that little bit of a dance that starts to open up. And so that's just really, really powerful that's kind of your approach, right? On a human level. When it comes to what you see as a skills coach, right? So I'm sure you're getting a different insight to these people than their head coaches are. You're getting this different lens, and it's not maybe that you have more of a insight, it's just that you have a different insight.
Right.
Based upon where you're sitting and what you can see with these players, high level players all the way down the youth level, what do you wish their head coaches knew that you think sometimes they're missing out on?
I don't know that there is anything when you phrase it that way. I think that's more my job is, and we all, because we all have different backgrounds and different roles, that you serve a different a purpose in a player's life. And so each person will learn different things, and then we should all be reported back to the head coach on what he needs to know. I think it's just my relationship will be what it is. And I guess that's why we have diversity in coaching staffs. So we've got ex-players, because they'll form a different bond with the players. We've got guys who are skill development, and I'll form a different bond. The head coach will form a different kind of bond, and we're covering all possibilities of the kind of relationships that these players need, hopefully, so that we can discover the things that we need to discover and then report back to the guy that needs to know all of it. What I would want a head coach to know, I don't know if this answers your question, but what I would want a head coach to know is just more the things that the player is working on. Not because they need to know, but because the head coach needs to be able to walk in a gym when the player is just kind of shooting around and pay him a compliment with, hey, that looks a lot better. And if a head coach can walk through the practice gym while we've just finished a workout and then be able to pinpoint what we were working on and compliment it, that goes a long way. And I'll give you an example. I was working with Jonathan Isaac in Orlando, and we had a new front office that came in, and John Hammond became the general manager. And I'm doing this workout with Jonathan, and we're wrapping up, and John comes into the practice gym and walks across the floor towards us. So this is our boss. We stop and we chat with him, and he starts going, I can tell he's going to make a technical comment. And I always get nervous in that moment of, oh crap, what's this? What's he going to say? Even though he's the GM, he may not know shooting. And so what is he going to say? Is he going to derail potentially everything that we just did? And he said he hit the nail on the head on what we were working on, and then offered just a little insight on another player who's not known as a shooter. Just if we could have got this guy in Milwaukee to work on this thing, man, the improvement that he would have had. And it was just such a relief that, okay, he got it right. And you can create that. You can stack the deck in your favor, where I just tell the head coach, okay, so-and-so is working on this, and that, like, if you get a moment and you see him performing it well, then just pay him the compliment. And and then the head coach gets to be the nice guy who's noticing little details all the time, and that makes players feel good.
I love that suggestion, because I think so often today the relationship between coaches and trainers is so tenuous. You know, and I think, you know, trainers have this bad name of pretty much anybody that wants to be a trainer can put trainer on their name and start training kids and charge whatever type of money they want, right? Not that there's not unqualified coaches out there too, right? But there is this, you know, very strained relationship between them. And here you're offering a suggestion that I think could be really valuable for that connection between the trainer and between the, you know, the head coach. I think obviously most coaches would be more excited if their kid, one of their players, is able to be working with someone as qualified and certified as yourself, right? And they might pick up the phone a little more quickly, and they're like, well, it's Dave Love on the phone, right? Other than just, you know, Joe Schmo on at the local rec center, right? So, but I think there is, you know, this great, that's a great recommendation, you know, because so often I think we see the opposite. You know, oh, what's your trainer telling? Ah, he's wrong. You know, don't listen to him, right? Like, that's the type of thing, because right. It's egos battling.
He's my guy. The player's my guy. And I've seen it now. I've been with a team and looked in on the independent trainers. And then I've been, over the last couple of years, working for an agency and more of the trainer. And even when I'm the independent guy, I do try and reach out to the head coach and just say, like, here's what I try and make myself a de facto member of the team, and just say, like, ultimately you're the one paying him. You're the one deciding playing time. You're the one deciding how to use this guy. How can I help you? And there are a lot of trainers who do that sort of thing. We should all be doing it. Even at the junior high level, you want to get a great reputation. You want to network to advance your career. Help people. Like, the player is not your player. The player is the on somebody's team, and you should be helping that team. It's not just that person.
Yeah, no, I think that's fantastic, because It's great advice for the trainers that might be listening to this podcast. I know there's many, and I know there's coaches that listen to it. And it, I don't know if it's whose responsibility, it doesn't really matter. But yeah, I think there's a great power in reaching out and connecting. I remember coaching in Tennessee, and a trainer that used to work with Pure Sweat named Robert Klim, who's just been a great friend and mentor to me over the years. And he reached out and just kind of wanted to come in and work my team. And for whatever reason, you know, I took him up on his offer, and it was powerful because he was able to form unique relationships that I wasn't able to. And I think the best thing that I did that maybe I didn't do in the past was I didn't come in with an ego. I said, man, this is great. He's able to connect with my guys in a unique way that I haven't been able to. And he's able to, you know, have conversations that I haven't been able to get to. And not every coach is going to connect with every player in the same way either. So I think that's the best thing we can do is kind of put away a little bit of our egos and reach out and connect like you're talking about there. One thing that I wanted to touch on real quick, and this kind of might lead into some more conversation around your philosophies around just teaching in general and kind of how to build confidence within players. But one thing I really wanted to ask you about was physical proximity, because you talk about relationship and connection. And, you know, one of my favorite books of all time is Culture Code by Daniel Coyle. And he goes in there and he dives into, you know, Greg Popovich and just other great leaders, and but Popovich in particular, the physical proximity and how he uses that. He uses physical touch and that type of stuff to really form relationships and connections. Now, there's obviously, you know, the off-court relationship, but I also think that the physical proximity has an impact on they're being able to be receptive to information and stuff. But I am not an expert in this. I think you have a lot of few ideas on this. So how do you use physical proximity when it comes to your instruction with players?
So full transparency, you sent me some of these questions before the podcast. And when I read this one, I was like, awesome. I love, and I remember this section of the book that talked about Popovich and the crossing of the arms, slightly downward looking up through your eyebrows to show like that sort of the I'm listening posture. And I read that and thought that's profound. So I made a point to when a player starts speaking, if they say, hey, I've got a question for you, or it's something I'm feeling, if they're giving me feedback in a workout, I try to immediately stop what I'm doing. And I don't always get to, but I try to immediately stop what I'm doing, stand in front of them, cross my arms, and start to nod as I look up through my gigantic eyebrows. And just like signal to them non-verbally with, I'm listening to you. I've got what you said. And the other part that was so, like, I remember Pop would, like, grab a guy's elbow. And I don't know why that, but I thought, I'm gonna try that. That feels a little strange. Like, here I am, a 6 foot, 185-pound guy, and I'm working with 7 foot, 240-pound. I want to refer to them as men as though I'm not a man as well. But, like I feel tiny at times, and then you're supposed to like grab a guy by his elbow. Like it feels very, but it gets attention. And it's like, so when somebody, if somebody says something really profound and I'll grab them by the arm to just like really reinforce what you just said right there was perfect. Like just be really aware. Or on a shot, I will, if they shoot their first like perfect shot early on in like the first couple of workouts where they hit, all of a sudden they put everything together and they shoot exactly what we're trying to build, I'll stop, stand in front of them with like the most excited expression I can put on my face and just let them know like that's, I know it feels small, but that was big. And then the proximity is something I'm very aware of, and this is why I was excited to talk about this. I try to send a lot of nonverbal cues to players early on in our development, early on in working. I spend a lot of time standing very close to them, And that's kind of a signal that I give that I've got you. As they improve, I try to move around to stand behind them, not partly because I can see what I want to see better from standing behind them, but partly because I think that's a little nonverbal signal that I'm still here, but you've got this. Like, you're the one in control. And then I will actively, like, consciously, as a player's going through some reps, I will back away from them so that I start out standing right beside them, and 5-10 reps later, I might be standing on the sideline. And I feel like that signals to the player, you've got this, you can do that. And then the second they need it, like a few bad shots, I'll be right back and standing beside them, just give them a little correction, and then slowly start to back away more. So I don't need to talk about it, and I don't know that anybody's even aware of it, but I think subconsciously they kind of feel that I don't know if it's a signal of trust or empowerment or what it is, but I think it can be a powerful signal.
All right, now next week's episode, we're going to be continuing our conversation with Dave Love, and we'll be taking kind of the conversation a little bit different direction. But in the meantime, I'd encourage you to check out some of the free resources that we are offering at thriveonchallenge.com. You can get the Culture and Leadership Guide PDF. You can get 5 Ways Any Leader Can Improve Their Culture PDF, and the Culture Transformation Kit PDF, as well as the podcast notes to every episode of the Coaching Culture Podcast. All you got to do is hop on over to thriveonchallenge.com and subscribe there, or there's a link in the details of this episode just to get some of those free tools to help you as a coach to continue to grow and improve your culture. Thank you for listening in to the Coaching Culture Podcast.